on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is Fred Roberts, 89 years old, born in Augusta, Georgia, raised in Oakland, California. He spent his last four decades in Ogden, Utah. We've heard a little bit about his time on the destroyer, the USS Putnam, and his first taste of action on a 5-inch gun crew bombarding the island of Iwo Jima. It would be off of Okinawa a few months later in 1945 that Fred would come up close and personal with the phenomenon of the kamikaze attack. And Fred, you guys came pretty close to being hit by a kamikaze.
More than once, because they would dive at you. I think we, at one time, we knocked five or six planes out. And I don't remember the period that it was. It was, we were out on radar picket.
So when you're on radar picket, as you described it, you're kind of an early warning system for everybody else. So it's you and other destroyers,
yes,
spaced out.
Spaced out, yeah.
And you see these planes coming in, and yeah, you're on one of these guns? You guys are trying to take out those planes with your guns?
Well, actually, at that time, I wasn't on a gun. I was up in a radio shack, and you could see them, and you could hear what was going on. I know that we were coming in. They had what this supposedly was a safe harbor between two islands there. And we were coming in from radar picket with a destroyer called the USS Twiggs. And they were about 500 or 600 yards behind us, or maybe a little more. And all of a sudden, it just blew up. It just went up in flame.
And, torpedo.
Nobody really knows that I know of. Some people say a torpedo, some people say a mine, some people, I don't know. But it just went up, and of course we stopped, and we started pulling the guys out of the water. And I think out of 360 approximately men, there was 114 that were saved. And Moncrief, our chief, saved 14 of them, I think.
And you were actually in the water, too, trying to help these guys up?
Well, I jumped in, and I tried to push guys up. People were up there on the decks pushing up, you know, and everything. When something like that happens, you just react. I mean, you can't say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You just react to what the situation is. And the situation was trying to get those guys out of the water, the flaming water. And a lot of them were brought on board with terrible wounds and that. And we had a doctor at the time. They cleared the wardroom. They operated on what they could in the wardroom on a table there. But you can only do what you're supposed to do or what you think you should do. And a lot of times it's just reaction, you know, you do things instinctively, you know. And in that case, that's what it was, trying to save those seamen.
So this is a destroyer just like yours.
Yeah.
It gets blown up, basically. There's
blown up.
Flames everywhere. Oil is burning in the water.
Yep.
You don't know if they're, you know, if this was a torpedo plane that hit them. You don't know if there's more in the area, if there's more kamikazes coming.
Well, it wasn't a kamikaze, I don't think, in that, because it was kind of dark when we were going in. And
All you know was that this ship was burning.
It was destroyed.
And there's sailors all over the sea.
Yeah.
And you say, you know, you jump in. You make that sound like, you know, you jumped off the side of the pool or off a diving board or something. It's not easy to get from the deck of the destroyer into the water, is it?
Not really. You try to get up any way you can, and they were putting things over. But I wasn't in the water that long. I just went in and got a couple of guys, you know, one guy or two guys, whatever I could do. And then I got back up on deck because they were full of oil, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I started pulling them up when they were handing them up and everything. And I don't remember how many guys were in the water at all. And I wasn't in there that long. And then you went up there to try to carry them to places, you know, where they could be worked on. I don't know if I'm explaining this correctly.
Well, I think you're doing a good job. And forgive me for being over persistent here, but I just think most people have never lived through an experience like this. And I want them to understand what it was like. So these guys are in the water. Some of them are burnt. Some of them may be wounded. They're covered with oil.
You didn't look at that. Some of them you wouldn't have recognized anyhow because they were full of oil. You didn't look at that in that respect. You just were trying to save people.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't stop to say, you know, well, this is this guy, this is this guy. Or you were just doing what you could. Most of the things I did at that time was just help carry them to where they could be put down and, you know, and taken care of. That's what I was doing.
And I'm just putting two and two together here, and only you can tell me. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head, but something tells me in a war where there's so much destruction and you've seen so many things that you've never seen before, that that opportunity to help save some other sailors' lives had to be one of the more satisfying things that you did.
Well, you know, when I went in the Navy and when I was serving my time, I never thought about anything like that. I was just a teenager, and I had gone into service because we were attacked, and I was just trying to help my country. I never had time to think about like when we were engaged, you know, like we would go out for mines and things like that. And you were just doing your duty. And at this time in my lifetime, I don't remember what some of my thoughts were.
What about now? Is that pretty satisfying to know what your ship did in that situation?
Yeah. I'm not into this rivalry between the services. I don't think like that. And I just look at it this way. We all had a job to do, and you did your job, and you had unity at that time between the services. You didn't have any arguments, battles, or anything like that between, you know. If I'd have been older, I might have had different thoughts, because a lot of those guys, you know, they were older. They were worried about their families. I didn't have anything but my mother and dad and brothers and sisters, you know, but they had children. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were thinking different than I would think.
That's a good point.
At the time, I was just trying to do what I was supposed to do, and I had listened because, you know, I love my country, and I still do.
One more question about the rescue of all these sailors from the Twigs. In reading about that, a sentence that I saw that makes me wonder. It says, exploding ammunition made rescue operations hazardous.
What it did, from what I understand, it hit the magazine. It was a magazine that was going off.
So while you guys are pulling people out of the water.
Shells were going off, yeah.
In a very unpredictable fashion. You don't know where it's coming from and where it's going.
No, it was just flames and noise is what it was.
And you still weren't scared?
No. Mary will tell you, I'm not a scary guy. I'm emotional. Yeah. I'm really an emotional person, you know, and I'm impulsive, but I'm not scary.
And I don't want to make you emotional, but something happened right before that. Here you guys are saving all these sailors whose ship was blown to bits. But just hours before, your ship was almost hit by a kamikaze.
Yeah.
Tell us how that kamikaze was denied, what its goal was.
Well, you know, you don't know what that pilot was thinking.
Tell us what happened. So a kamikaze is making a beeline.
A kamikaze was coming in, and he dived into it and smashed into it and put it out of commission. You know, he put it down. And you don't know whether he was wounded, or he didn't have enough gas to get back, or he just did it out of bravery. And because you'll never know, because you don't know what his thoughts were.
But the bottom line is, this kamikaze was seconds away from hitting your ship.
Yeah.
And what would have happened if it hit your ship?
Probably got sunk us, or really we'd have been sunk or hit or damaged beyond, you know. And you don't
know. At best, you would have had a real bad fire and damage on your hands, right?
Yes, because some of them destroyers were hit for 3 and 4 planes that didn't sink.
But it would have been bad news.
Bad news.
And out of nowhere, this American pilot, which probably isn't easy to do to time this up right, he crashes his plane into the kamikaze. He kamikazed the kamikaze.
Yeah.
And gave his life in the process.
Right.
How many men do you think he saved by sacrificing himself?
I think we had 360 men on that ship. I always say that it was a man a foot, 360-foot ship, 360-foot men. You had 1 foot.
Uh-huh. So, deluxe accommodations.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of ships were hit and sunk with one plane. A lot of them took 4 and 5 planes. Like they had a destroyer, the Hadley, I understood, 5 or 6 planes, and it was still afloat. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law said that his ship was hit with 4 planes, and it was sunk. I just can't think of what, other than the fact that this man saved our lives. I put it that way because we could have been sunk or we could have been, survived, but you don't know. You don't know how much ammunition that plane had, bombs or whatever it had on it, you know. And I remember seeing those carriers hit, and they were just big flames that go up on them and everything, you know, because some of those planes had bombs, and they just had enough gas, from what I understand. They couldn't go back. They had to dive. And because they couldn't get back to Japan.
Well, and I guess part of the tragedy of this situation is that pilot was never identified.
Never.
Don't know his name, which, let me come back to that later with some of your recent adventures. But just in that moment, and I don't want to preach at you, but a verse from the Bible comes to mind where it says, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend.
Yeah.
That pilot laid down his life for all of you.
Yeah, he did.
Is that heavy for you?
Yeah,
to think about?
I'm kind of which way about it. Would I have done that?
Mm.
You know, would I have tried to do that? Or try to ditch the planes and have somebody pick me up?
Mm-hmm.
See, he had two choices, either do that or ditch the plane. Then we picked up a lot of pilots that didn't make it onto the carriers because they were shot up and everything. And we'd have to go out there and pick them up in whaleboats and that. When you ask me a question, sometimes I have thoughts, what would I have done?
Sure.
You know, would I have gone into saving that ship or would I have ditched the plane and tried to have somebody pick me up? In this 70 years, Mary will tell you, I think about things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I always have. One of the things is I'm glad I survived and I'm glad our ship wasn't hit. And we were one of the five destroyers, I understand, that wasn't hit. And it was just pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
And not because we did anything wrong. I mean, you know, tried to get away. We were right in there.
You know, and a thought just occurred to me, too, about that June 16th situation where that American pilot saves you from the kamikaze, and then a few hours later you guys rescue all the sailors from the twigs. Not only did that pilot save your ship, he saved those guys from the twigs because you guys wouldn't have been there to rescue them.
That's a good thought because I hadn't thought about it that way. I haven't joined the pilot and the twigs in my thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
And you brought it up, and that's the truth. And maybe that was something that should have happened in a way. You know, you hate to see a man die, but also you hate to see a whole crew gone.
So you guys go through all of this. You've still got Okinawa going on. When the war came to an end, was there some celebration on your ship when you learned that the Japanese surrendered?
Well, I've got pictures in that book, and we were anchored with a Pennsylvania, which was a battle wagon.
Yeah.
And the day they announced the surrender, that battle wagon was hit. And we still don't know it. Probably a torpedo. We're not sure. And they were trying to save that. So it was mostly worried about that Pennsylvania from sinking and mm-hmm. trying to do what we were supposed to do rather than celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we did celebrate, you know. I mean, we congratulated each other and that, you know. But we were glad the war was over because it was getting pretty scary out there, you know. And
you tell me, but I have a feeling that you had some maybe even potentially scarier moments to come because you can see the enemy and you can fight the enemy, but it's kind of hard to fight the weather, isn't it?
You mean the typhoon?
Yeah.
I think that's when I was more, if I wasn't scary, but I think I was a little scary on that because we would go in and the ship would come up like this and it would go down and the waves would come over the top of the ship and that. It's like those rogue waves almost, you know. And if you'd have lost power or anything and you got sideways and, you know, you were tipping over.
So where were you while all that was going on?
I was in the Radio Shack, I think, at that time.
There were probably worse places to be, but I want to clarify, this was a different typhoon, not the infamous Typhoon Cobra or Halsey's Typhoon, which sank the USS Hull, the USS Monahan, and the USS Spence, and claimed the lives of nearly 800 Americans in December of 1944. The typhoon you were in was after the war was over, mid-September 1945, and by 3 days before Christmas, you would be all the way back to the States in San Diego. What was it like to come home after all of that?
We came home and we came into San Diego. And then from there, we went through Panama Canal. And we were assigned to the East Coast, Brooklyn Navy Yard. I could have been discharged in California, but they kept me on the ship. And they took me to New York to be sent on a train clear across country, believe me.
In the military's infinite wisdom, huh?
Oh, yes. They were going to torture me.
Did you ever get yourself in any trouble?
I beat up a guy one time and mouthed off. But other than that, I don't think I ever got it. I wasn't a troublemaker. I did what I was supposed to do. And
what did he say to set you off?
He started talking about family, and I told him to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't shut up. And so I smacked him and broke his nose. And it happened to be right under the Commodore's quarters.
Uh-oh.
And so they had me up. Isaac J. Kidd was in his little cubicle, and they had us up there. And they absolved me of anything because I had witnesses that what he had mouthed off about. And he's the one that got the warning and a broken nose.
Yeah, I hope he learned his lesson.
See, I wasn't one of these guys that call people names or anything else. And I'm not one of these guys that I've never been type of that would pick on people or be derogatory in any way. I joke and kid a lot, but it will never be against anybody. It's mm-hmm. always against me.
And you said about yourself earlier that you're an emotional guy. Was it emotional to get back home and see your family again?
It really was. It really was. Because, you know, towards the last, as I got a little older, I got to thinking, you know, that I could have been killed out there, just with not only me, but other guys too, you know.
Yeah, and in your case, you never would have met your wife of 65 years now, Mary. We need to take a break, but when we come back, we'll find out how Fred and Mary met and an experience they got to share in the past year that added a lot of perspective to everything Fred endured during World War II. If you'd like to see a photo of Fred and Mary or other pictures pertaining to Fred's Navy service, hop on Facebook and punch in Hometown Heroes Radio. Hometown Heroes will head down the home stretch right after this.